The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm sorry, I just suddenly started thinking about the chicken heart. That ain't Cincinnati. Heartland of America. Well, I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble bunker that is not eaten by a chicken heart, and we're happy to report that.
Oh, that's right. That's the Bill Cosby
yes. It's a balmy 38 degrees Fahrenheit here in the Windy City, in the unwindy city. It's actually very windy here. We get lots of wind, so Chicago, you don't know wind.
Yeah, it's...
You ain't got no wind up there.
Yeah. Whipping across the plain here. Not much.
That would be Oklahoma.
Well, yeah. And I imagine there's more of it there. And more in North Dakota, too, I can tell you from experience.
I got to tell you, when I lived in Nebraska, oh, man, you don't want to hear the stories. I literally stood in the yard one day and cried because I was trying so hard. There's just nothing to stop that wind out there. The occasional, you know, so-called wind break around the farmhouses. But I was standing in the yard and just, I was trying to rake up. The yard had been power raked. And so there was so much stuff to go and rake up. And no sooner did I rake it than it blew back in my face. And after about an hour of that, it started crying.
I can understand the frustration there.
Don't deal with that here. We just leave all that behind.
That's true. That's why mulching mowers have been invented. Well, and that we have a much smaller yard. And a lot of what falls in our yard is pine needles anyway. So
yeah.
Anyway, today, February 19th of 2012, and there's much to discuss. A lot of weirdness, high weirdness. And,
it's been 2 weeks. That's why there's so much to discuss.
Well, there's that.
We have not been on in 2 weeks.
But there's that. And there are some who'd say we've been off for 7 years, actually. But it has just been kind of a weird couple of weeks, not least of which was the announcement last week, just prior to the Grammy Awards, that Whitney Houston was found dead in her hotel room.
You know, there's a really, really good article at Vigilant Citizen that Chris Putnam sent to me this morning.
Okay.
And it's Whitney Houston and the 2012 Grammy Awards Mega Ritual. It just gets into the high weirdness of her death right beforehand, the fact that the party went on.
Yeah.
The
limos pulling up right next to the county coroner's hearse.
It was, so bizarre. Yeah. The drug culture involved, the fact that it seems to, as we saw with the Michael Jackson ritual, which lasted for months and was on CNN constantly, and still they show that special now and then, that sadly her family was not allowed to grieve in private, that because she is a public figure, that it was very much a public ritual to me. And then that very night we see Nicki Minaj,
right,
go on stage and have this, she essentially exercised herself.
That was really weird. Now, and just as a personal observation, I find it still a little weird that 20 years ago, my job was to pick hits as the music director and then program director of several top 40 radio stations. And now I have no clue as to who any of these performers are, which is probably a lot healthier place to be than then.
I wish I didn't know. I've been watching their videos for a while now, trying to really kind of get a handle on what's going on in the world, because I've been doing a lot of research into the old 1960s satanic rituals that were very much a part of early rock and roll as we know it now, you know, Elvis and getting into the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, et cetera, and how they dovetail into this synchronicity with Charlie Manson and many of the things that, frankly, Peter Lavenda writes about. And because I wanted to bring that up to date, I've been also watching Lady Gaga and Nicki Minaj and CeeLo Green and a lot of those other videos that, I tell you what, they're disgusting. They are really disgusting.
Yeah. It's really interesting that here we are 60 years down the road from a lot of those performers of the early days of rock and roll. And we kind of look back on that now as an almost an innocent age with, people who are our parents' ages who were fans of the big stars of the 1950s, Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis.
It's because we're taught to look at it that way.
Right, right. And, that was an innocent time when, we'd go to sock hops and have, no, if you look at some of the stuff that those guys were doing back then and some of the lyrics that made it into the public domain, which was really surprising. I mean, some of the lyrics that Little Richard put out there. Like in Good Golly Miss Molly, for example, some of those lyrics are very overtly sexual.
Oh, yeah. And I'll tell you what, women are treated like objects. Not only were they treated like objects by the men in the rock and roll bands back then, but they were portrayed as objects then and now. Mm-hmm. And in the lyrics, they are just nothing more than toys.
Yeah. Same as it ever was, in other words.
Yeah, it's not changed a whole lot. It's just that now it is even more open and even more disgusting.
Yeah.
It's no longer behind closed doors, let's put it that way.
Well, that's true. So Nicki Minaj shows up at the Grammys dressed as the Scarlet Whore of Babylon and accompanied by a guy who looks just like Pope John Paul II.
Yes.
Dressed, wearing the same clothes, the whole fish hat and the whole thing. Now, this young lady's 29 years old. She's from Trinidad and Tobago, was raised in Queens, in New York City. She went there after her parents moved to New York City looking for work. And she made it big in about 2008. She started to hit the scene, was offered a big contract in August of 2009. So she's only been really big on the music scene for about the last 18 months or so.
Almost an overnight sensation.
Almost.
In fact, I would say she is that. And when you see an overnight sensation, you have to ask yourself, okay, what did they do during that night, that overnight? What sort of favors were granted?
Well, yeah. But now, you've got some firsthand experience of the music industry.
I do. And that's one of the reasons that I really want to, get into this as much as I can, because I do come from that background.
Yeah.
When I was in my late teens and during my 20s, I was involved in the music scene, so to speak. My dream was to be a famous singer. I wanted to have a rock contract. I was even offered a country singing contract, and I turned it down. But I know what it's like to have agents tell you what to do. I know what it's like to have managers come in and personally dress you and tell you what you have to do and have and not to do in the clubs and how to perform on stage. And I know that the drugs that are involved. I know the way that young women throw themselves at the men who are in the bands. And that was a very tiny sliver of a peek at what is really going on in these hotel rooms that lead to events such as, sadly, the death of Whitney Houston.
This is kind of an odd fact that I'm just throwing in here. You replaced a singer in a band who went on to become a popular...
Jinx Dawson. I replaced her in a band called Madison Zane, and she went on to record with Coven.
She was, according to
the guys who were in the band, she was very much into things that would be described as part of a coven.
Well, she bills herself now on the web as like the original queen of goth or what, something like that. But she's very much into the occult.
Yeah.
But sort of a brush with that world where she left to join up with what eventually became Coven, I guess. Of course, their one hit was the theme from the movie Billy Jack, One Tin Soldier. And you took her place.
I did.
Like, ooh, weird. But I was sort of on the outside, on the edge of that, looking in as a top 40 music director, program director, radio personality, and met a number of these folks. And some of them were pretty down to earth and seemed to be fairly well grounded. I remember Eddie Money seemed to be, have a pretty good sense of humor about himself. Greg Kinn, you remember the Greg Kinn band? But there were some that you met. I met Prince at a concert after a concert in Memphis, and he just was like, there was like a wall around him. Now, it could be just an odd personality. I don't know. But there were a number of folks that as they walked through the radio studios or through the group backstage after the concert, were just really off in their own realm. And I don't know if that's a common character trait of people who are in that world, or if it's just they're literally being controlled and manipulated.
Well, I think that to a certain degree they are directly controlled. I mean, I certainly was. I wasn't mind controlled that I know of. But I do know that even though I was a Christian at the time, that I sure wasn't behaving like mm-hmm. one.
Well, I mean, clearly you weren't controlled.
No.
Because when you offered the opportunity to live that lifestyle, you know, the contract, you said, no.
Turned it down.
Yeah. So Nicki Minaj's performance was disturbing. I've only watched little segments of it, but I've heard the audio that from the video that you played as you were writing the piece that you posted
awful,
to Sharon K. Gilbert. Very disturbing. Sharon posted an article about it at SharonKGilbert.com, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes.
In fact, I'm going to be on Thursday evening with Pastor Butch Paw,
mm-hmm.
and then Friday afternoon I'm going to be recording with Rick Wiles of True News about these very things, the Madonna performance at the Super Bowl
mm-hmm.
and the Nicki Minaj.
Yeah.
Her name is Minaj for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her real name was Mirage, M-A-R-A-J, and actually Mirage might be.
yeah.
But yeah. It's been stage name Nicki Minaj, and the song that she chose, which was titled Roman Holiday, apparently deals with what she calls an alter ego, Roman mm-hmm. Zolansky.
Yeah,
which
that's
when you
how
look at it,
it's,
yeah, it's, you look at it. I thought it was Zolansky, and I thought, oh, Roman Polanski, the guy mm-hmm. who directed Rosemary's Baby back in the '60s, and who had to leave the country mm-hmm. over charges of sexual abuse with a minor. Was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I better look this
yeah.
up. Make sure I get the details correct.
Yeah.
But that's the name of her alter ego, and this so-called.
Her alter ego Roman likes to dress as a girl
because he's
but
gay.
He's a guy,
right?
Yeah,
and he's gay.
He's a transvestite.
Mm-hmm.
So he is being exorcised from her, or that's the attempt by this priest in the music video that she or the live performance that she did at the Grammy Awards. And I got to tell you, it is so incredibly disgusting. There were two pulpits, so mm-hmm. to speak. One on either side of the stage, and there were young boys who were clearly supposed to be acolytes, and they were dressed as they would be in a Roman Catholic ceremony in a mass,
mm-hmm.
and there were very scantily dressed female dancers in disgusting poses on the pulpits in front of these boys, and the boys had this shocked look on their faces like they were entranced, but at the same time, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. What is this that's happening to me? And the entire sort of church was being, if you want to call it that, was because there were stained glass windows in the back and everything, was being taken over. And it began after this confessional that was so extraordinarily atonal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it moved to a film of the priest, sort of like the exorcist, showing up at Roman Polanski's house. Zolansky,
yeah.
Yeah. And then we get this live scene at the Grammys, which has been panned over and over again. It was clearly not considered a great musical performance.
No, not a tour de force.
But it was there. It was done for a reason, and it was showed Roman being held down
mm-hmm.
as if being sacrificed on the altar, where Christ would be hanging mm-hmm. in a church. But instead it was this, you know,
alter
Nicki Minaj
ego,
as
yeah.
the altar. And, of course, it was a failed exorcism because at the end these naked, and they were wearing, you know, body stockings, but these naked demons writhed up onto the platform and were dancing with everybody, and clearly evil won. That was the message of the show.
Uh-huh.
Evil wins.
Yeah.
And this is right after Whitney Houston died, probably from a mixture of alcohol, too much partying, and prescription drugs.
Prescription drugs. And you know, all of this taking place in the same hotel.
Yeah.
Very, very weird. Roman Polanski, but I was right. It was sexual, unlawful sex with a minor was what he was charged with. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, the Book of Knowledge, the Wikipedia article, reports that this took place in 1977. The girl was 13. And in 2009, Polanski told a Swiss television station that he has regretted that episode for the last 33 years.
Yeah, that's why he fled to Europe and didn't come back.
Yeah, he was convicted, but to avoid sentencing, he went to Europe. So anyway, 33 years of regret.
If you are not familiar with Roman Polanski, and some of our younger listeners may not be, he directed the movie Rosemary's Baby, which mm-hmm. is about the birth of the Antichrist, Satan raping a human woman and begetting this creature that is, it's now at the end of the movie, you have these old people mm-hmm. who are part of a coven going around and proclaiming that the year is won, that Satan has been born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a very, very disturbing film, because although the people in the film appear like the folks you run into at Walmart.
It would, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah. In fact, you have to wonder. But mm-hmm. Polanski was married to Sharon Tate, who was murdered by the Manson family.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're too young to know who the Charles Manson family were, then you really need to read some stuff, because you could make the argument that everything that we're currently experiencing began with Aleister Crowley.
Yeah, or was at least focused, brought into focus by Aleister Crowley.
Well, very much so, and Aleister Crowley's adherents, like Kenneth Anger, who was a buddy of Bobby Beausoleil and Charlie Manson, and mm-hmm. knew the Beatles and Marianne Faithfull and Mick Jagger, and you can almost name the connections. There are 6 degrees of Charles Manson mm-hmm. that you get into, and they all go back to Aleister Crowley.
Yeah.
Aleister Crowley, who is on the Sgt. Pepper album cover twice.
Liked him so much, they included him twice.
Yeah. Twice
worth,
is nice.
Reading Peter LaVenda's series, Sinister Forces, which mm-hmm. is a three-book set. And one of them is, the Manson Secret?
It may be that's called that, but it is essentially the 6 degrees of Charlie Manson.
Yeah, that's what we described it to Peter, that when he kind of laughed, he said, yeah, I guess you're right. It sort of is, because it all seems to revolve around Manson. Everybody seems to have a link going back 2 or 3 degrees mm-hmm. in what was going on in the 60s and 70s.
Well, you know, some of the things that I've been reading actually you are making an argument for a conspiracy belief, if you want to put it that way, that the Beatles were actually a product of Tavistock Institute.
And that's something I've not done a lot of research into. I know the name, but to get into detail
their recording company, EMI, actually was a military contractor. They did electronics for the military in England. And mm-hmm. After a disgustingly seedy run in Germany playing at strip clubs, where John Lennon did things like urinate off balconies onto people that were going over to Catholic Mass that morning mm-hmm. on Sundays and calling them names and things like that, scaring nuns. They were suddenly, when they got back, actually they were sent a telegram by their manager, and he essentially said, EMI wants to record you. EMI was the place to go. Exactly, mm-hmm. out of the blue. So they were taken under George Martin's wing at EMI, and he essentially constructed the Beatles out of these four sort of half-baked musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And by half-baked, you can even say half-drugged, because over in Germany, they were apparently consuming
mass quantities
of various mind-altering substances.
Yeah. I've read little bits and pieces of that, and maybe because the Beatles were just ahead of my time, I've never really been a fan of their music, that it doesn't hit quite as hard or as close to home for me as it does for you, because you were very much the target age group when the Beatles were at the peak of their powers.
I was. I think I was in, they were 64.
Mm-hmm.
63, 64 is when they started really becoming big over here. And at that age, I was, you know, 11, 12 years old.
Mm-hmm. And I was still in diapers.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I mean, you were, weren't you?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, I don't know. We can call your mom right now and ask
her. Mom would know, yes.
Mom, your mother would know. Oh, it took
forever.
Your mother would know. That's a Beatles song. As I said, they were probably a creation of the Tavistock Institute. And Tavistock Institute plays into all sorts of little mind control scenarios, including the London bus bombing.
You know, it's... And there's an interesting article here I'm going to have to read, or a collection of articles at educateyourself.org, which...
it's a great resource. They've got just about anything you want to read over there.
Yeah, Tavistock, the best kept secret in America. But I'm going to use this London bus bombing as a to segue into a different topic, because we could do a full hour just on this. But
the wheels on the bus go round and round.
Yeah, and sometimes they come off. And usually it's the FBI or MI6 behind it. The there was another failed or foiled terror plot last week, which you may have heard of. I've not been listening to as much news or watching as much news the last week, week and a half.
You know, we've essentially cut the cable here, and we get our news off the internet. And
yeah, but I mean, I just don't find myself as compelled.
It's the same headlines over and over again.
Well,
you can only
exactly.
watch that so many times.
And I think this was filed in my mental, you know, circular file for that reason. The FBI arrested a gentleman who was reportedly en route to the Capitol building to detonate a suicide bomb. This reported by USA Today on the 17th, which is Friday. The initial reports
this
sort of described this. Yes, exactly. You know exactly where I'm going with
this.
Yeah, I do. They described it as a narrowly averted attack, but then CBS News later found a source who said, "Nah, this man was never a real threat. The explosives that this so-called bomber were provided to him by the FBI during what they described as a lengthy and extensive operation, and the only contact he had with anybody who." With Al-Qaeda, let's put Al-Qaeda in air quotes there, wasn't really Al-Qaeda. They were FBI agents and officials posing.
CIA.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Posing as. So they. This is the latest in a number of plots that have been reported
remember
here in the United States.
Remember the guys down in Florida, those kids that wanted to get their little jumpsuits and stuff like that?
Well, sure. And they didn't even have money for, you know, they wanted, you know, like matching uniforms and stuff.
Yeah.
And, they were so clueless that they basically had to be led by the noses, and then until they were actually arrested.
Well, this guy similar thing. He was practicing the whole, you know, bomb vest and everything at home, making sure that he could detonate it right.
Yeah.
Sad.
And then there was the September 2011 attack, which was foiled by the FBI targeting the Capitol. A guy who thought he was going to be provided with multiple gunmen and a drone to bomb the U.S. Capitol in Portland, Oregon, December of 2010. The Christmas tree bomber who was approached by the FBI, who gave him a demonstration with live explosions at a park in the area to, you know, prove their ability to get him what he needed. It's like the FBI is looking for people to lure into these harebrained schemes just so they can arrest them and say, see, this is why we need to be able to scan your cars with x-rays on the highway. Or to listen to all of your phone calls and read all your emails. What's really disturbing, though, is that this article, which I will link to in the show notes from a website called the Land Destroyer Report, links to another article, which I will also put a link to in the show notes, because I found this really disturbing. This is a 1993 article from the New York Times, which discloses the existence of audio tapes provided by an FBI informant, which make a pretty good case that the FBI knew well in advance of the World Trade Center bombing in 93 and that they were planning to intercept the bombers and substitute harmless powder for the explosives.
Oh, yeah, I've read that before.
Yeah. And that somewhere, someone inside the FBI messed it up.
Totally feel terrible about it.
Right. So... You got two things here. First of all, that the FBI knew about this plot and failed to stop it. And then tried to cover it up afterwards by saying we were totally in the dark. We had no clue.
You feel sick about it.
Yeah. Well, this informant's audio tapes made it clear, or at least seemed to provide pretty compelling evidence that the FBI did, in fact, know that this plan was underway. And the second point is, was it really an accident that they forgot to substitute the harmless inert powder for the explosives?
Well, that is the question. I mean, we didn't send harmless inert guns down to Mexico.
Yeah. Was it really a mistake? So, you know, we'll never know the answers to those questions. And, of course, the history that most of us will be taught, and our children and grandchildren, is that these radical Islamist bombers got away with it and the FBI was caught by surprise because we didn't have enough security measures in place to detect what was going on. And the fact is, or at least the compelling evidence based on these audio tapes, is that the FBI knew it, could have stopped it, and that after the fact, there were people who were saying, yeah, the supervisors, you know how the bosses are, they really messed it up. They just, you know, guys trying to CYA by blaming it on a superior who should have stopped it, didn't stop it. They knew it was going on, and we meant to stop it, but somebody, you know, well, what are we going to do?
You know? Well, it's not the CIA, it's the CYA.
Yeah. Well, no, sadly, this was the FBI. So kind of a disturbing thing.
The FIB.
And what's really depressing when you go down this road is that every time a story like this comes out now, my first reaction is, yeah, right.
Yeah.
I would like to believe that we're the good guys. I would like to believe that our government is telling us the truth when they say they're looking out for our best interests. I really would. But we see so much evidence over and over again that even with the Oklahoma City bombing, that there were elements of the government involved at some level. And, you know, and because of the obfuscation and the CYA activities after the fact, we'll never really know the full and whole truth of who knew what when. But the fact that there are questions that have not been satisfactorily answered about that, about 9/11, about going all the way back to things like the sinking of the Lusitania,
yeah,
or the USS Maine. It's like, are we getting the truth about anything?
I was only 2 or 3 years old when those things happened, so you can't blame me for any of those. No, you and I, we want, and I think many of our listeners, we really want to believe that the United States is the way it's portrayed in those Coke commercials.
Yes, yes.
And in the way that
Norman Rockwell paintings, sure.
Yeah, exactly. And the director of Independence Day. No. Armageddon.
Okay.
Roland Emmerich.
No, I don't think he did.
The one that used to do the commercials and then just these beautiful.
Michael Bay.
Michael Bay. The beautiful imagery that mm-hmm. he uses that
oh, yes.
is so powerful and makes you feel like what an amazing place mm-hmm. to live this world we're in, particularly if you're blessed to live in the United States right. of America.
And it's sad. And don't confuse where we're going with this, because
this country.
Yes.
I really, really do. I would love to believe that our country is pure and holy,
yeah.
and always
shining
in the right,
yeah.
shining city on a hill. Yeah.
And
but we're not.
We need to remember the biblical commands to us to obey the ruling authorities and to pray for
and
our
we
leaders,
do.
Even
we
when
really
we disagree
do.
With them. You know, it's like we heard at church this morning. You know, we're told to love our enemies. What? You mean I got to love him even when he doesn't love me first? Oh, this is hard. Well, yeah.
Yeah. So, I love that message this morning. It was, you know, you need to be a believer on ordinary days.
Yeah, yeah.
In an ordinary day, you need to still shine, you know, as mm-hmm. a Christian. And it's one thing to have an extraordinary event happen like 9/11 and everybody to pull together mm-hmm. and pray together. Or like, you know, sadly, Whitney Houston's death and
right.
her family. They went back to the church that she was, you know, a young girl in where she sang in mm-hmm. New Jersey and that she had strayed so far from in her career as a singer. And having peeked at a tiny slice of that world and the temptations and the way they, mm-hmm. that you're directed to behave, I can understand how you can get into that, mm-hmm. even if you're singing in church when you're in high school. This draw toward, you know, when those things happen, we are praying together and we're all No. The ordinary days. That's right. You need to do all of those same things. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to pray for your nation. You need to pray for the world, frankly. Pray for Iran. Pray mm-hmm. for Syria. Pray for Yemen. All of these areas that are, frankly, under spiritual attack right now.
Right.
And it isn't because they're not practicing democracy as we define it. It's because they, like the rest of the world, are under the influence of the Antichrist. The spirit of Antichrist mm-hmm. is loose in the world. Paul told us that long ago. Mm-hmm. It's just it's not embodied in a human being yet.
Yeah. Well, So anyway.
Well, some might say it is.
Well, step off of that soapbox and step onto some others here.
Oh, I'm sorry, honey.
No. I'm both of us kind of soapboxed there for a while, and I think that was, I think it was well needed.
Yeah.
And speaking of being under the influence, we've gone down some paths and caught some criticism for accepting what Scripture tells us in Ephesians 6:12, that we're not wrestling against human opponents, that there are agents of the enemy, spiritual agents, literal evil intelligences who seek to do us harm, and that people can fall under their influence and be possessed by them. And there are groups out there that actively look to collaborate with them, groups that have gone over to the dark side willingly and whole hog. Aleister Crowley was one we mentioned, but they're still active in the world today. And sadly, the world seems to be working very hard to debunk that idea. Some within the church, certainly those outside the church. There's a story that comes from very close to where we lived in St. Louis of a woman, a second woman now, two women have come forward and claimed that a clinic that treats eating disorders used hypnosis to convince them to implanted false memories of involvement in a cult.
Oh, yeah. Getting back into satanic, false memory syndrome.
Right, satanic rituals. In fact, the gentleman who wrote the article, I just noticed the byline here. I used to work with him.
Oh.
Yeah, the radio station in St. Louis. He was working for our AM All News station while I was doing the Top 40 thing. A good man and a good newsman. And a man of faith, as I recall. And it's a balanced article that he wrote, but you can tell from the tone of the article that this malpractice lawsuit has come forward claiming that these memories she had of being being part of this cult and attributing her eating disorders to being involved in these rituals were in fact implanted. You know, the false memory syndrome that we're told is to blame for the satanic panic of the 1980s. And another article that linked back to this article at CBSLocal.com out of St. Louis referenced the satanic panic of the 1980s.
In other words, to remind you,
remember that we had this period where we thought that there were all these cults out there abducting our children and forcing them to sacrifice babies. But, remember, that was just a mass hysteria, which is another thing, like false memory syndrome, that doesn't really exist. In other words, I'm saying that demonic possession is more real than false memory syndrome
mm-hmm.
or mass hysteria.
It goes way beyond a performance on stage at the Grammys.
Yeah. So now it may well be that these two women, and according to the article, there are other women who've come forward, but under Missouri law, they've only got a 2-year statute of limitations to file a lawsuit, and their statute of limitations have expired. So there are other women who've come forward and complained about this therapist at this Castlewood Treatment Center in Baldwin, Missouri.
That was not far from where we lived.
No, not very far at all.
That was a strange little park. You and I drove down through there a couple of times, and I think that Nicole had a friend who lived down in there.
Yes.
There was this little area that almost looked like suddenly you turned into the Black Forest.
Mm-hmm. It overlooks the Merrimack River down
there.
Yeah. Very, very beautiful area, heavily wooded. There was a subdivision that was built up there in which Nicole's friend lived that had formerly been the site of a monastery.
I was going to ask you if that was the area where that one monastery was. A very, very strange little area.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Oh, so beautiful.
I think there's just
an odd sort of spirit in there.
Yeah, well, this was a little further upriver from where that subdivision was. I was selling real estate at the time, and I remember when that area was opened up for development, that became a very popular area because it was in a good school district. It was close into the county, and the homes were reasonably priced. But this area, the picture of this facility is beautiful, and they've got another setting, another treatment center's got another facility nearby on a 55-acre tract of land that's looks like a mansion, basically, where people will pay a healthy fee to go and be treated for their eating disorder. So again, not commenting on the merits of the case one way or the other, except to note that this is the kind of thing that skeptics will point to and say, well, see, this is all...
Geraldo Rivera.
Exactly. Well, Geraldo was the one who promoted the satanic panic. So, you know, let's cue the debunkers. Mm-hmm. Cue the amazing Randy.
Well, except that didn't he essentially, well, I know, but I was thinking that Rivera, I'll have to look it up, but I thought he was actually saying it was all satanic panic, that it didn't really exist, that they were implanted.
Well, he may have gone back and changed his tune, but he was one of the ones who was really investigating it.
We'll look that up after the show. But, the reason I'm looking weird is I hear this whine. Do you hear that fan? Is it the fan on my computer?
No, I think it's the fan coming from the Mac down here under the table. This one has a pretty...
it is?
Yeah. It's got a pretty loud... that's why it's under the table to get it away from the microphones.
How come it's so warm? Doesn't... is it upset?
Big processors.
I don't like the way this show's going at all.
Yeah, this is kind of freaking me out here.
I know. Oh, you know, let me take a total left turn and take you down an economic route.
Okay.
There's a lord in the House of Lords who had a little story back in 2010, I think it was, where he was talking about a corporation that he just referred to as
I remember that. I saw the video. Yeah.
Corporation.
Yeah.
That had supposedly some shady deals and was offering to pay off the public debt for England.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, that'd be great. And he said, look, they're really serious, and they want to do it at 0% interest, and went into this whole thing, and I don't think that anything... Now, the Lord we're talking about, sorry, is it Blackheath?
Lord James of Blackheath.
Yeah, I don't...
Foundation X was what he was looking for.
Yes. Yeah. He said it was... absolutely solvent, absolutely sound. He had seen the balance sheet. And this is a guy who has some banking chops, some financier chops. And he just a few days ago addressed the House of Lords on something that is a little bit different, but I think may be related in the long run. And that's the story of what he thinks may be a money laundering scheme that ties the banks, some of the banks here in the United States, with some over in England, including the Bank of Scotland, to the tune of $15 trillion. At the same time, the very same day, I saw a story that $6 trillion in financial instruments had, fake ones, had been seized in Italy.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. And Lord Blackheath said, Lord James of Blackheath said that in his 2010 address about this X institution, Foundation X, that he didn't come right out and say that it was associated with the Vatican, but he implied it was.
Yes, yeah.
So,
and his most recent speech was on Thursday, February 16th, so just a couple of days ago. And he talks about he was asking for an official inquiry into the mischief that I shall unfold this afternoon. Said first, there may have been a massive piece of money laundering committed by a major government who should know better, effectively, and undermine the integrity of a British bank, the Royal Bank of Scotland, in doing so. The second possibility is that a major American department has an agency which has gone rogue on it because it has been wound up and created a structure out of which it is seeking to get at least 50 billion euros as a payoff, which would be, what, about $75 billion. The third possibility is that this is an extraordinarily elaborate fraud, which has not been carried out, but which has been prepared to provide a threat to one government or more if they do not make a payoff. These three possibilities need an urgent review. In April and May of 2009, the situation started with the alleged transfer of $5 trillion to HSBC in the United Kingdom. 7 days later, another $5 trillion came to HSBC. And 3 weeks later, another $5 trillion. A total of $15 trillion is alleged to have been passed into the hands of HSBC for onward transit to the Royal Bank of Scotland. We need to look to where this money came from and the history of this money. I've been trying to sort out the sequence by which this money has been created and where it has come from for a long time. It starts.
He claims that this document, he says, it's quite astonishing, purports to have been from a meeting. It was witnessed by Alan Greenspan and Timothy Geithner. Now, and he makes the comment that it wouldn't be too hard to verify their signatures and call them on the phone and ask, did you sign this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. He says this originally starts off as the property of one Johannes Riadi, who has some claims to be considered the richest man in the world.
I've also read some stories that claim that he either doesn't exist or he's a scam artist.
Uh-huh.
Now, whether or not any of this is true, I don't know, but I think that Lord James of Blackheath is putting into the record at the House of Lords something that he's very concerned about. That's my guess.
Yeah.
Or he's had two things entered into the official documents of the House of Lords that are setting up something else.
Whatever. Just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, the annual budget of the United States of America is somewhere in the order, if I'm remembering correctly, of about, about $3.7 trillion a year?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's right. American federal budget, looking it up now. So when you're talking $15 trillion, you're talking about four times the annual budget of the government of the United States.
Why would any bank want to sign $5 trillion worth of receipts?
That doesn't make you'd have to wonder about that.
But that's just five.
Yeah.
They did it three times. It's $15
trillion. $15 trillion within a very short span of time. I think that's right. About $3.7 trillion. I think the American tax revenues annually is about $2.3 trillion. So, again, you're talking about a substantial sum of money.
Supposedly, it came from this Riadi's account to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, which, as I understand it, is really not a bank. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York. It's not associated with the Federal Reserve. I'm not sure.
Oh, yes, it is.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Went from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, passed through J.P. Morgan Chase.
Oh, and this was been when Geithner was the head.
And then forwarded to London, all using what's called the SWIFT. Means of sending it was a Swift note,
right.
Which ought to have been registered with the Bank of England, mm-hmm. if genuine. So when this happened and came about, the Lord of Blackheath, says, I first of all took it to my noble friend Lord Strathclyde and said, what do we do with this? He said, give it to Lord Sassoon. He's with the Treasury. So we did, and Lord Sassoon looked at it and said immediately, this is rubbish. It's far too much money. It would stick out like a sore thumb, and you can't see it in the Royal Bank of Scotland accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Quite right. Secondly, he said, the gold backing this is ridiculous. Now, this is a quote from Lord Sassoon. He said, there have only ever been 1,507 tons of gold mined in the history of the world, so you can't have 750,000 tons backing it. Well, actually, it was 750 tons, so the 1,000 was not, it was actually saying 750. But anyway, this is true, and the third thing he said, obviously, was, it's a scam, and I agree with him, said Lord Blackheath. It was a scam. The problem is we stopped looking at that point. We should have asked, what is the scam? Instead of, at that time, just nodding it off, and we have never really resolved this, because today I have this piece of paper, he says, and he claims to have the original contract. It's not a photocopy. So he's got original signatures from Greenspan and Geithner.
Interesting.
So what the heck is going on? He says there are some 20 banks listed in this document. From this audit review in the end of July of 2010 on the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, it has 20 banks listed to which $16.115 trillion are outstanding in loans. My lords, that is the sore thumb that was being looked for by Lord Sassoon. But more particularly, there are two other very interesting things in this. The first is that Barclays Bank got $868 billion in loans. The Royal Bank of Scotland got $541 billion, in which case one has to ask, is that they could have earned in 3 weeks enough to pay off their entire indebtedness to the taxpayers of Britain? Why have they not done so? And can we please ask them to put a check in the post for the whole $46 billion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the conclusion of his speech, he basically says, either we have a huge amount of tax uncollected on profits made, or we have a vast amount of money festering away in the European banking system, which is not real money.
And it's not really showing up anywhere in anybody's audits.
Right. So this is something that is really flying under the radar. I don't recall this being reported on by any major news source.
But the speech
we're looking at is not something taken from a conspiracy website. I'm looking at publications.parliament.uk.
Exactly.
This is the official
transcript of what he had to say.
Took place in the House of Lords. And we'll put a link to this in the show notes, too, so you can look at this. This is astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
This is astonishing. I really thought after what he said the first time went viral on the internet, you can find the YouTube video very easily. Just do a quick search, Lord James Foundation X, and you'll find it on YouTube. This is from November of 2010, that something would have happened then and nothing did. And here he is in February of 2012 saying, this is still out there somewhere. So what happens if this, in fact, is not real money and is out there in European accounts, considering what's going on now with the debate over how do we rescue Greece? Should we rescue Greece? If we rescue Greece, you know, what do we take in exchange? That kind of thing. All of this is going on in Europe while Lord James of Blackheath is up here saying, you know, there could be up to what's he saying now? How many billions of dollars out there just floating around loose? 15 trillion? Or is that
15 trillion? Yeah. He also says, I believe that this is such an important issue right now that I've put everything I've got on this subject into a 104 megabyte memory thumb drive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I just pray that you're kept safe, Lord James of Blackheath.
Wow.
And that you have many, many copies of that thumb drive.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still trying to get my mind around this as to what exactly this means. And we'll probably have to do some more thinking on this and maybe find somebody who's better versed in global finance to talk about this.
One of the reasons he makes the point that this probably virtual money, what's it from Second Life or something? virtual money could have been actually
Lindenbucks, yeah.
If it goes through enough channels, eventually it becomes accepted as real money, and you can actually lend it out.
Money laundering, sure.
Yes. Yeah. And you can make, he said, you can make a 2.5% profit over per night. A 2.5% profit per night on $15 trillion.
Hmm. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot.
I imagine that's the overnight rate that you would charge on money loaned to other banks. Right now, the Federal Reserve Bank charges members of its system like nothing to loan.
What is that, like $300 billion or something?
Well,
I don't know. It's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah. Again, the mind reels at the thought that this is out there. And no wonder Lord Sassoon, in looking at the figures, said this is ridiculous. I mean, $5 trillion, again, that's, almost twice as much as the U.S. government spends in a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money. What else is going on out there? The drumbeats continue to get louder for war with Iran. There was a report out in, was it The Guardian, in the last day or so, basically quoting U.S. officials saying that the sweet spot for the attack will be sometime from March through October.
Mm-hmm.
So, October surprise. You can't change horses in the middle of a stream. President Obama gets reelected.
Exactly. Yeah. You and I were talking about that the other day, that if it's going to happen this year, it will happen before the election. Well, McCain and Lindsey Graham came out today, and they were saying that we need to arm the rebels in Syria. Syria and Iran have a very close relationship, and if you poke a stick at one, then the other one's going to, you know, bark at you.
Mm-hmm.
They literally have a treaty that if one is attacked, the other one will.
Yeah. Well, you know, then the fix is in because Angelina Jolie says it's time to go in and intervene in Syria.
So, you have got to be kidding
Angelina
me.
Says, you know,
she's, Tomb Raider.
Yeah, yeah, it's time to get in there. Just to backtrack for a second, I almost let this slide past, and my memory is holding up a red flag here. The $6 trillion in fake U.S. bonds found in Italy on Friday.
Yeah, I mentioned that a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I know. In the whole Lord James thing, I just kind of shoved that off to the side.
$15 trillion is bigger than $6
trillion. Well, it
but
is.
The question is it part of a similar scam? What I mean, are there virtual Second Life kind of scams all over the place? Because essentially the money that's floating around the world is not, you know, dollars and things you hold in your hand. Mm-hmm. This is all digital. This is digital bookkeeping.
Right. And this is, if I'm remembering correctly, this isn't the first time that counterfeit U.S. Bonds have been discovered in huge quantities in Italy. I seem to remember a story that came out about the same time as the last Lord James story. You know, okay, we're both consulting the Book of Knowledge now. Counterfeit U.S. Bonds. There was a arrest sometime back. But anyway, again, $6 trillion in counterfeit U.S. bonds, roughly double the annual expenditure of the United States government. Here we go. This was going back to a story from ABC from when? It just gives a date, but not a year. February 20th is the date, so clearly it's not... Well, unless it's across the international dateline. This is from the Philippines. Officials say they've seized more than $2 trillion in counterfeit U.S. Federal Reserve bonds in the southern Philippines.
Yeah.
Is this...
We saw a story shortly after 9/11 sometime, I think it was from the Philippines, about fake dollars or fake pounds? And they were like $1,000 bills or something. They were huge... denominations, and there were suitcases of them.
Yes, I think that was the story I was trying to remember from 2009. Japanese travelers found with $134 billion in phony U.S. bonds.
Yeah,
I think that was that may have been the story. But $134 billion, that's these guys are small potatoes.
You know, they really are.
This was in Italy. Okay, so that was the trigger. It was in Italy. The financial police there arrested two Japanese citizens. Again, this from June of 2009. But again, in February, just this past weekend in 2012.
Well, you know, we've also got a number of scandals that are coming out of Italy, including the one claim by one of the insiders there. I don't know that he was ever named, who said that he has received information... intelligence, that's the word I'm looking for. He's received intelligence that there is an assassination plot for the Pope, that he may die this year.
Huh.
Well, we have that tied to the Nicki Minaj, you know, Pope activity where she walks into the Grammys, you know, on the arm of...
Right. The Pope-alike, yeah.
Yeah. We have the fact that 22 cardinals were just in new positions were just created. So,
right.
Because you have to be under, I think it's 80 or something. Under a certain age to vote. So they needed more cardinals to vote for the next pope. And we have Tom Horn is going to be coming on with us one of these days soon, I think in the next week or two.
Probably next weekend,
He and Chris Putnam are going to be talking about their new book, Petrus Romanus, which is based on the St. Malachi legend.
Some call it a prophecy.
Call it a prophecy. But this list of the popes, and if the list is true and it's understood correctly, then we got one more.
Mm-hmm. And again, that's the big if.
Peter the Roman.
This is interpreted correctly and if this is genuine, then Peter the Roman would be the last one. And I think that depends. Well, again, if it's interpreted correctly, the next one would be the last one.
The phone.
Okay, we're back. We've answered the phone call, and you have to disregard everything you've heard of the show to this point. No.
We're really sorry. Everything we said is a lie.
It was the automated alert from our pharmacy saying
the computers were calling us.
Our meds are
the
ready.
The computer in the car was talking to you. We were leaving church. We're heading over to Dairy Queen. We go to Dairy Queen almost every Sunday with this wonderful group of people from the church. And we're heading over there, and all of a sudden Derek goes, "Change oil now. What the heck is that?"
Yeah. The fellows who did it last time very cleverly got in and set the alert for...
There's a setting on the computer system in the car that you can set for a 3,000-mile or whatever you want to set reminder. But it looks like a warning light. Instead, it was a reminder.
Just a reminder, so nothing to worry about.
Yeah, well, computers are after us. Yeah. We know that.
So, anyway... Yeah, so a lot going on in a lot of it going on in Italy. There are also rumblings in press that follows the Vatican closely about lots of leaks and that are intended to make the Vatican Secretary of State look bad. And he's apparently a close friend of Pope Benedict. And what is done has actually had the opposite of the intended effect, because the Pope is actually supporting his. Secretary of State, and apparently these leaks were intended to make it look as though the fellow had lost control of his department or something. A lot of observers appear to be confused. I'm not very well versed in what's going on here. But
let me go to something that is sort of related to this whole Vatican thing, and that is that this is the year, of course, that the Olympics are in London, the 2012 Olympics that we saw indicated in the handoff to London at the end of the China Olympics, that we saw this burning tower, the Tower of Babylon, everything burning, the Phoenix rising, and then we saw this London bus.
Right.
Because, of course, it's in London this year. Well, in 4 years, it will go to Rio de Janeiro, a highly Catholic nation with a giant statue of Jesus Christ.
Right.
In fact, I have read that there is a plan. I don't know if it's actually been defeated or not, but there has been a plan to, you know, where they had the London bus at the end of the Chinese Olympics. At the end of the London Olympics, they would have a giant Jesus statue.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm, to represent Rio de Janeiro. But the connection is that... In the Beatles readings, we're coming back full circle. The Beatles videos that I have been watching, getting into many of the mythologies around that group, one of them is, and there are some strange videos out there, not just compilations, but videos that Paul McCartney has done himself. And I've watched one video that seems to indicate a terrorist event in London, simultaneous to a terrorist event in the Vatican.
Hmm. Sounds like the plot of a Dan Brown novel.
It does, doesn't it? Well, you know, we'll see what happens. But 2012, we have said all along, it's a most interesting year. And we do live in interesting times. And we have said over and over again, no matter how interesting it gets, there is no reason to fear as long as you have Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior.
Mm-hmm.
He is there as your advocate. He is there as your king, your companion, the one you turn to when you're afraid. Charlie Manson, that I have been reading about, controlled people by making them fear. Jesus Christ takes away our fear.
That's right.
The enemy wants us to be afraid. Mm-hmm. So don't fall for that. Trust in Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well,
have we gone an hour yet?
We had to stop, and I've got to edit together the part around the phone call from.
Oh, and then of course the
pharmacy X,
the reprogramming.
Yes.
Pharmacy.
Yes, I think we're probably getting close. We could go on, but rather than continuing to beat.
We also want to mention, by the way, that we are very sad that Future Quake has gone off the air. They had their finale to their 7-year run. And I know that both Mike Bennett and Mike Tater have many projects that are going to be coming up. So be sure you go to futurequake.com occasionally and, you know, check for news from them. They have all their archives up there. You can listen to all the past shows. There's no reason why you need to, you know, go on, you know, cold turkey. You can listen to the oldies.
Mm-hmm.
Derek and I will continue to do PID radio as long as the Lord leads us to do so. It may not be every week. It may only be every 2 or 3 weeks. It depends on the schedule that we have and what the Lord brings to us, lays on our hearts.
Yeah, and we're getting involved in a lot more analog stuff with the church family that we've met and friends that we've made here locally, which is a healthy thing, I think.
We've got some things coming up as far as conferences and things like that we're doing this summer. By the way, if you have not already signed up to go to the Branson Future Congress, the Prophecy Conference. Yeah. Sorry, Future Congress is in Dallas. The Prophecy Conference that is put on by Prophecy in the News.
Mm-hmm.
You need to sign up quick because those places are going to go very, very fast. The very first day that it was announced, I got lots of emails from people saying, I've already signed up. I'm already there. See you there. Can't wait. I know the hotel only holds so many people, so get your reservations in there because we want to see you there. And we're going to be not speaking so much as we'll be interviewing. So
Right. We'll
get to have lots and lots of guests during that week.
Definitely looking forward to that. And there was one I wanted to tell you about. Got an email from some folks who are connected with a conference coming to Lubbock, Texas, the Fellowship Church in Lubbock, which features the dates, March 31st and April 1st. So that's just about 6 weeks away. L.A. Marzulli and Russ Dizdar are the featured speakers. This is a conference that is dedicated to the occult resurgence in our nation and the coming end times deception. It is the first conference this particular church has held, dealing with supernatural problems facing the nation and facing us as families. And I give them much credit and praise for having the courage to do this, because many churches really don't want to touch topics like this because they are so controversial, and because we've been conditioned through the media to believe that when we start talking about supernatural oppression and
satanic panic.
It's satanic panic. It's all in your mind. You just need different meds or whatever.
Yeah, just go get some ice cream.
So this, again, will be at the Fellowship in Lubbock, Texas. The website is The Fellowship Lubbock, all one word, thefellowshiplubbock.org. And look for Know the Truth, which is the name of the conference. Again, L.A. Marzulli and Russ Dizdar will be there on March 31st and April 1st. And Dr. Jed Burton may also be there. He's going to try to be there for that conference. So it definitely looks like it will be well worth the trip. If you're anywhere near Lubbock and have the ability to travel for this conference, this will be one to catch.
Cool.
No, until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content copyright Gilbert House and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out.